And as soon as I watched it, I regretted not watching it sooner. This is one of the craziest genre-bending horror shorts I have ever seen in my entire life, and we're going to dig through Colby's board. You're such a nice guy. I want to know where this darkness comes from in you.
Let's tidy up this tangle of film by putting it on a reel. Here is a motion picture film, 1,000 feet, 16,000 separate photographs.
Welcome, everybody.
I like an origin story. That's how we roll. So what's the origin story of Cruising in Gomorrah? Where did this baby come from?
Yeah, for sure. So it was probably like a few summers ago that I was like chilling on a beach and I... Just a happy place, my happy place. But then I had this like image of this beach on screen and just like a certain shot of it. And then the accompaniment of dread, a feeling of dread. And I was just like, oh, I guess this isn't my happy place anymore.
Was there something that brought it on?
Not really. No, to be honest. It was still very exciting as much as it's like a dread feeling. Like when I get struck with some sort of inspiration, it's always a good feeling. So that was awesome. And it was just this feeling and this image. And then I actually did think this could be, I had this idea for a feature first, but as you might know, when you're starting out, like making a feature is a little ambitious, so how can we make this a short?
It's the end zone.
For sure.
Right?
Yeah.
It's the touchdown, but you gotta get off the 5-yard line in the defense's end.
Exactly.
That's my sports analogy for the entire episode.
It's good. Well, I don't really know sports, but I believe
I'm surprised
it.
I got through that much.
I was just thinking about it and letting that idea kind of percolate. And I think what kind of brought it to the next level was I was talking to my friend who I often work with in film, and he...
Who's this? Shout him out.
Do you know Luke Whitmore?
I know the name, but I've never personally met Luke.
Okay, he's a sound editor. Does a lot of other things as well, but that's kind of his main gig right now, but he's very good. He also edited the film.
No, did a very good job.
Yeah, I would say. I think he read the script, and then we got to talking about other things, and then I told him this story about this time that I went on a big trip. This was like my gap year of university, or between university and high school. And
the fuck around you, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And I went to England with a friend. It was an interesting experience. I think we kind of figured out, you know, that we are in maybe different spheres.
All right.
And there was a moment that is like probably the only moment that's like very similar to...
The two characters.
To the two characters, which is the moment where he asks if he can put sunscreen... on his back.
I wanted to ask you about that. And before we really get into the weeds of this, let's preface for listener. Mm-hmm. What is the basic story of it? Because that right there caught me.
Okay. So yeah, Cruising in Gomorrah is about two friends that go camping together. They're old friends. They can tell they're kind of drifting apart, but trying to keep it together. I think conflict starts, tension arises. A stranger comes to visit and sort of creates chaos between the two of them. And it's an erotic body horror. So you can imagine.
It's both of those things,
it's
listener.
All of those things.
All I'm doing right now is trying not to kill the shot that he told me not to talk about that you need to watch. So just know that that's happening in my life right now. But yeah, no, it's beautifully shot. Who's your cinematographer? Shout him out, too.
Yes, of course. Quan Luong.
Yes.
He is a master. He's, I think, one of our best in the city right now.
Yeah, I've seen his work through Ian. Him and Ian working together.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Ian does the show when he's not making a big deal of his movies and his life. When he has time for his little people.
Right. So Quan, you know, that collaboration was so essential, and I thought... You know, yeah, it just elevates the film into this new level, I think.
It really does, because, I mean, a lot of people who go short film, they think, oh, artsy, right? Like you can't pack a lot in, and I'm learning too. I'm one of those people. I'll admit I'm not embarrassed about it.
Mm-hmm.
That if you just slow down and give the time to short film, you actually there's more in there than you think because mm-hmm. you are on a time constraint, right?
Totally.
And you jump right to like the for listener here. I mean the themes that are in this are obviously the queer experience, mm-hmm. isn't it? LGBTQ themes are through it. They are. I guess there's a crush there, one could say, or maybe something
yeah, there's
from a
some
childhood.
Sort of, some sort of attraction that's has been either ongoing or maybe just started out of the blue without any explanation now that they're like a little older.
Yeah. And then you tie it into the religious aspect of a belief system and what's a sin and what's not a sin in the world of in a queer world. And but then it's all placed inside of a horror, and it's that's where it gets interesting because you don't see that. Where did the idea to make it in that world? I guess is my question.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that first feeling that I had, that dread feeling, was the first clue that it was probably going to be a horror. But I think as I started, you know, writing it, and then also like. You know, as you start writing these things and you needing to maybe like pitch it to somebody.
Yeah.
You know,
you gotta ground it in something.
Yeah. Log lines and just writing
the
about
business.
Writing about it, you know,
yeah.
I discovered, I think the juxtaposition that really like was my anchor throughout the whole process was that it's the beauty and the horror of kind of being in the closet or like
yeah,
of being oppressed
by and then the that's what I loved about it because you were using a genre that gets used for stabbing and murder and but you were telling it from obviously like you said a personal perspective and that's you see that it's coming across is my point and
good
it was Again, I'm trying not to ruin it. The title, Cruising Gomorrah.
Mm-hmm.
What made you want to root it in Sodom and Gomorrah? Was there something in, like, do you have maybe a argument with the religious world, per se?
I don't know if it's really an argument anymore. I think at one time there was definitely an argument and there was definitely like a rage and just like
I'm a lapsed Catholic. I get it.
Yeah.
I know how they can be.
Yeah. No. And mine's more like, I guess, Mennonite, but like still Christian.
Yeah. We're all in the same fucking boat.
All in the same boat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I that rage I sure can tap into if I need to, but I don't really feel that intensely anymore about that kind of thing. But I thought, you know, this movie really felt like kind of like where I am now and like bringing in my past of some form of oppression, one of them being, you know, religion. There
sure.
were obviously other forms of oppression, but that one felt right in this context. And in terms of the title, I think I didn't really find it until
it's fun.
It's
because in the story, listener is where was the beach that you shot at? The beach you were at is there, or did we double for something?
No. Basically, we were hoping for a beach for the longest time, and we tried our best to do that. But with the money that we had, we had to basically shoot closer to the city.
Sure.
And so we were like, oh, I guess like a park or a river. Or something, and then we were even going to shoot at Beaudry Park for a little while, but then that fell through like 2 weeks before shooting.
As it does,
and then so we had to find a new place, and it's actually inside the city, which made it even easier.
So
I think it was a blessing.
You can't even tell, man. It looks. I was like, is that Manitou? Is that West Hawk? Like it's Manitoba, right? So you get lucky when it's nice and close and beautiful.
Totally, yeah. But yeah, it was an ideal location, and the whole cruising in Gomorrah title, I think.
The double entendre, I think.
Double entendre.
The double meaning, so to speak.
Because
it is, it's a local gay spot with the lore behind it.
Yeah.
And what is that lore for a listener before they prep them a little bit?
Are you mean like cruising? Or?
Yeah, the cruising aspect of it.
Yeah, like it's that's certainly a part that I was like, oh, once a stranger comes to visit, I was like, I think he's kind of like a cruiser.
Yeah.
And so for listeners, yeah, cruiser is like the queer history behind that is that that was how men met each other in public, often in parks, public bathrooms, and it goes back like forever, like in history. Like they've always been doing it as long as like men have like gay men have been oppressed. That's been happening. And there's like a danger aspect to it as well, but also that's, I think it lended itself well to the, like the danger, but the sexiness of it.
Yeah,
of like,
100%.
You know, like, ooh, what am I going to find in the woods? You know?
Your cast is fantastic. Tell listener who's in your short.
Ben Krawcheck.
Yes.
He plays Chris.
Yep.
And then there's Jonathan Lawrence who plays Alex and Eric Plamondon who plays, Sculpted Man / Creek Demon.
I was like, what do we call him?
Yeah.
Sculpted Man is a perfect. And I saw him on something else that he did recently. And I was like, oh, you're the same guy. I've seen you. I've seen you do crazy shit. This is so weird because you seem like such a nice person.
Mm-hmm.
With these themes, and here's a question. With the way the world can be, having these conversations and trying to portray these environments on set, what's it like on today's film set trying to not, I shouldn't say try to have these conversations, but navigate them and tell these stories? Like what kind of set does it take to be able to portray this kind of stuff on screen for other people who might want to do it?
Mm-hmm.
That might be the block, right?
Yeah.
They don't want it because it requires a lot of openness and honesty and communication. So how do you create that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just a lot of conversations and, like, kind of right off the hop, like, early in casting before we've even chosen people, being, like, very upfront of, like, you know, we're going to be asking you to do some kind of risque things.
Yeah.
And it's part of the story. It's based in, you know, experiences and but also it goes into, crazy places. So if you're not game, then don't continue auditioning.
Yeah, don't. I mean, it's as simple as that. Okay.
Yeah.
Now you guys used some local intimacy coordinators, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes.
Who was that?
Andrea Del Capo.
I know her from her theater work.
Yeah,
she's fantastic.
She is fantastic, wonderful, and Sharon Bajer as well. Bajer.
There's a big conversation. I wanted to talk to you about this because we don't really do a lot of stuff that revolves around sex and identity and sexuality. Mostly because it's four dudes, so we don't want to fucking, you know, we don't know what we're talking about.
Right.
But when you're in, when you're getting into this stuff, intimacy coordinators, it's a hot button issue right now in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Some people like them, some people don't.
Yeah.
What does it do for a story like this?
I think it's just.
Could you have told it without? What would that have been like now, knowing what you get from intimacy coordinators and the environment that they create?
That's a great way to put it, honestly, because I feel like there's just this, like, I think the world still doesn't know how to talk about intimacy in a like matter of fact way. Like, it's still this thing that we kind of,
I don't think we've defined it properly yet.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like kind of embarrassing to talk about. It's like talking about it with your parents.
Intimacy?
You know,
what's intimacy?
Yeah, what does it mean to you?
Sex scenes on TV with my mom in the room, I'm bailing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm 43.
Totally. And then it's like, okay, now I have to talk about sex with, you know, my cast and my
strangers.
And so I think having an intimacy coordinator like gives that job to somebody else who is a professional, who's trained in that, who knows how to talk about sex in a comfortable way, can be the actor's go-to person with any question that they have, any uncomfortable thing that they're unsure of. And it just takes off another thing from my shoulders, basically. Like
Check that box.
I don't have to think about having those discussions. Certainly we had discussions about those things,
but they have the set when that's going on,
exactly.
Yeah.
And so I can focus on other things and not feel like, oh god, now I have to have this conversation. Not to say that I couldn't. I think I probably could. But, yeah. I think the main thing is that everybody is on board. Everybody's obviously consenting to what's happening. I think, you know, it's a good thing to have that position, because it just, it's that go-between person for every question and thing that you can think of.
Yeah, they're there. I'm an outsider. I'm a fan. I'm a nerd for this stuff. But as soon I was like, yeah, why wouldn't you? Like, because when you think about how it used to be, it's like, you two have sex.
Yeah. Well, I remember theater school when I was acting. They would often just be like, okay, now you just make out, and there was no discussion of how or who was comfortable. It was just like, you did it. And it's weird to think about that now and being like, oh, that would never happen anymore.
No. And then when you think about it, if it does still happen, you're like, guys, come on. Like, everybody's cool if this person's on set. Like, why do you want to run the, but whatever.
Totally. But I know, like, some movies, like, I think Anora didn't have an intimacy coordinator. And I was like, I think that was a really intentional choice. For that movie.
Well, Sean Baker also has a lot. Like, he is Mr. Indie. He is. I mean, if he's the hood ornament of what it's like to be able to make something really awesome, like Florida Project, I adore.
Mm-hmm.
And you make it on the cheap, and it wins Oscars, and does, like, he's showing the world $100 million divided amongst 10 movies is better than one movie getting the entire budget.
Exactly.
But was that? I don't know much about that. Was that because they wanted to be as in the moment as possible? Because it's the same thing with fighting too, right? Sometimes it's just like,
I guess I hope that, and I would think that in this day and age, everybody would be on board and everybody would know. And I think the sex in that movie too is very like, when it's big, it's big, and when it's not, it's very intimate. And actually, I don't even know if there is the, like, I think it is just kind of big and, like,
it is very
rambunctious.
Yeah.
So it's almost silly in a way.
It adds to the level of comedy, because the two of them literally are so stupid that this is all they're doing.
Yeah.
Right? That's exactly the basis of their relationship. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to be intimate. It's not going to be long. And
yeah. So maybe that was part of it. I don't know. I guess I should probably look into that a bit more. But it is interesting that people are still choosing not to do it.
Speaking of intimacy coordinators, your film does move from insanely violent, bloody scenes to intimate looks, long pauses, moments where you can capture both characters experiencing something. How do you transition from, all right, let's do this a crazy scene, to bringing it back to the grounded story that you have of two friends, obviously one who has caught feelings, and you know, how do you transition? What's that as a director? And
yeah, I mean, it's a really fine balance, and honestly, it was always something that was like I wanted to get right, and there were honestly times where like, I don't know, maybe this won't work. Like,
did you have any doubt in this one? Because I mean, it's not a huge gamble, but you're taking a known, grounded thing and then throwing a lot of the general public, I would imagine, for, like, they just won't see it coming, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
So was there anything in your mind that you were like, this is a bad idea, I should just make a horror movie, I shouldn't tie in these stories and my personal experience to it?
Yeah, I mean,
I have a hard time writing questions for you, man. So I can only imagine what you must feel like.
Yeah, I mean, I think the personal stuff, honestly, was easier. And I think it's like, when I wrote the horror stuff, like the really gnarly, gnarly parts, like when I first wrote it, I was like, oh, this is fun. Like, I finally get to write this.
I can be a sicko.
I can be. I've been watching all these movies and they've been, you know, living in my mind and you know, engrossing myself with so many different, you know.
We're going to get
horror
to what inspired you in a second, but
for sure.
So we're gonna put a pin in that, but go on.
Yeah, yeah. But then when it came to actually, like, when I got the money to make this And I was like, oh, this is reality now.
Fuck, I made all these promises.
Now I have to make this. It actually got pretty scary. And I had to really, like, it was like this internal battle with myself of, like, can I do this? Is this okay? Like, and I had, but honestly, that was such an internal battle because every time I brought it up with my team, and eventually when
this
showed
went
the
into
film,
shooting, you were still like, hey, maybe we should cut this.
Well, not cut it, but I was just like,
dial it back.
Dial it. Well, no,
because you go to 11, my friend.
Thank you.
Like, you should, it's just like, it's so good. And I was like, oh, I know what he saw that inspired this because I think I mentioned it. And you were like, yep. Anyway, go on.
Yeah. No, it's fine. I think.
Doubt.
It was this, fear. This doubt, this fear, this even like guilt, which I think kind of like some ways.
Guilt? What was guilt for?
Well, I think it's just this upbringing of like, you can't think about gross things. You can't show gross things like, or I don't know. I think it's sort of tied to maybe that feeling of when you're a kid and you come across something that's normal.
Yeah.
But actually you think it's
societal.
Society tells you that it's bad.
Yeah.
And I think I had to sort of like, this was my like test of like, I don't know.
A litmus test.
Yeah, of like, if I can do this, then everything will be fine. But I really, like, I was, that fear I was dealing with up until I showed the movie, I was like, and then I was like, oh.
As you would, as any filmmaker, any artist, like, big fucking day, what do I, this was all great until now. Everybody on set was for it, but will the public like
but
it?
But now, and then, but like certain people in your life too, you know? Because like my parents aren't like horror people at all. And so I was always like telling them, guys, it's pretty racy. It's going to be a lot for you guys. And once they finally saw it, they were like, oh, it wasn't that bad. Like, I mean, it's bad, but like, it's not like we can handle it. They were like,
well, and it plays right because you turn the cruiser into the monster,
mm-hmm.
right? And as soon as, and you do it so subtly, man, like it's, it's all these little, there's a lot of moments where you hold the camera on Ben and Alex. And so we can catch it.
Yeah.
Right. So we can see Alex asking a normal question of, can you put sunscreen on my back? Mm-hmm. And Ben being like, sorry, Ben's character, being Chris. Thank you.
Yeah.
I remember scenes. I'm horrible with details. That's why we cut that shit. We'll probably cut this. But like, you let it marinate that there's more to this than this horror story. And it's, yeah, like it's a, like I showed Jimmy and Charles and they were like, holy shit. And I pitched it. I was like, this has a blank in it. And they're like, well, I need to see it now. Because it's an LGBTQ horror with a blank scene. And they were like, yeah, okay. And then they all came back and they, high praise, man.
Amazing. Thank you.
Is this your first?
This is my second.
Okay.
Yeah, I did make a little short before this that was basically with my own money. And
isn't it nice when it's someone else's?
It's
still trying
so nice
to find that for this show.
Oh man, yeah. No, it's very nice. That leveling up where you're given money, doors
trusted,
doors open, and you meet people that you know you wouldn't have worked with before. And
what? Who were your producers? Who was backing you on this one?
Yeah, Stephen Ground. His name is. He is.
He's the one who reached out to me originally.
Yeah. I met him fortuitously on the day that I won the RBC pitch competition.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And he was producing another person's project, actually Quan's project.
Okay.
And so I randomly was talking to Quan, and then Steven was there, and then I sort of pitched my thing to Steven, and then Steven was like, I could feel how excited he was about it as I was telling him, and I was like, oh. Okay, I'm glad you like it.
Stop showing your cards, motherfucker. I'm going to ask you for way more money.
And then we like emailed back and forth for a couple of weeks. And I was like, I think he wants to produce, but nobody's said the word yet. Yeah. So, and then finally he did. He said it for him, or he asked formally, and I was like,
I got it in writing.
Yes, of course. I want you.
No, yeah, you guys, he's very persistent in emailing Stephen. Thank you for continuing to do that, because this fortuitous moment would not have happened had you not been like, no, I think this guy will respond to me soon. I did.
He's a good guy to have on the team.
Oh, he's a champion for you. Like, writing that email, I was like, holy shit, I think I'm out of my depth here talking to this guy. He's like, he's the most professional guy I've ever spoken to over email. But back to what I said about putting a pin in it. Body horror is a big thing right now.
Yeah.
Who inspired you directorially? And whose movies or scenes did you kind of pull from that people might be able to be like, oh, if I saw that, I could see this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think Herzog's Nosferatu was a little bit of a...
Werner.
Yes.
Give me the bebe. Brilliant, man.
Oh, man, he's so good. Yeah. And that version of that...
Isn't that... Who's in that one?
Klaus Kinski.
That's it. Yes.
Yeah,
that's early Werner.
Yes, yes. He plays Nosferatu, or Dracula, or whatever. And he, I don't know. There's an eroticism to that whole movie that I think was kind of
Dracula's
what I was
always
going
been
for.
Horny.
He's always been horny. It's true. It's true.
Neck sucker, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, vampires in general.
They are.
They're kind of the most horny of all the body horror.
They, what are they? What was it in True Blood? They sparkle?
Oh, I haven't seen that one in a long time.
They do something where they can basically just charm you out of your underwear.
Yeah.
And you're just like, suck my neck and fuck me till I'm dead.
Of course, yeah.
You know, and I'm like, sure, but I mean, consequences.
Yeah, yeah.
Lifetime of eternal life.
It's tough, but.
Yeah. Would you do it? Would you let him suck you? Would you go to the other side? Would you Tom Cruise and would you be the Tom Cruise to my Brad Pitt?
Probably.
I think I would too.
Yeah.
I really would.
Yeah. I mean, Sinners also really proved to us that it doesn't look so bad on the other side.
It really doesn't.
No.
I mean, you don't have an argument.
No.
You just want blood. You don't you don't get to choose anymore.
No,
so that's
and they
taken.
Just seem so happy once they sucked it, so
in more ways than one, sir. That movie was so horny. I loved it.
Yeah.
That 8-minute break in the middle, the dance break.
Yeah.
You're just like, who are you, Ryan Coogler? What are you doing?
What
are you making a music video?
I know.
Like, brilliant in every aspect.
Absolutely brilliant.
Okay, so Klaus Kinski, Werner Herzog.
Mm-hmm. That was one.
That was one.
I would say Hellraiser 1 and 2 little bit.
Yeah. Pulling of body parts, ripping of flesh.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Yeah.
Possession, another one.
Yeah.
Trying to think what other. I mean, there's probably so many that just like seeped into my bones while I was preparing for shooting Gamora. But those were kind of the main ones. And then I had some other ones that actually weren't horror at all. That were kind of maybe a little horror adjacent, like The Power of the Dog. By Jane Campion.
Oh, yeah. Netflix. Cabbage Patch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was, yeah. Okay, your pacing, maybe?
Yeah, maybe the pacing. And there's like a little bit of a beauty and horror aspect to that movie as well, I think.
Yeah, it's one of those, like it's a Western, but the horror of how they treat each other is as dark as as dark as a Saw movie.
Yeah, it's really, it gets under your skin.
It does.
For sure. Yeah.
The way he treats that little boy.
I know. But then the boy gets
boy.
Back.
Yeah, don't burn it for him yet. It's only 4 years old.
Whoops.
You haven't seen it yet, listener. It's your fault. Body, with last year and Demi and The Substance.
Yeah.
Shit, I'm so glad I got that right. I was going to call it The Juice. And that's OJ's biopic.
AKA The Juice.
The Juice. But yeah, no, it's fun.
It
I think.
Is so fun.
Right? Like you have such a heavy theme, right? With, you know, religion and sexual preferences and identity and all that stuff. But then you complement it with this scene that I still won't mention, listener.
Yeah, yeah.
I want, this is me just getting them to go watch it.
Right? I mean, they'll have to.
At this point, it's like we've talked it up. How many, we won't say what they did, but what were the other things you thought of before you got there? Were there, was the big kill shot always there?
I think, yes, it was always there. I think in the first draft, even, it was there.
You sick boy. I love it.
I know. Guilty.
But it works, right? It works with the theme. It works with it works with what's going on. It works with how everything works. Like, it's
totally.
And it's
totally.
Like, you really, like, all of us, some of us, you really fucked up.
Good. Like, excellent.
You had us in the corner. who did your FX? Who did all your blood work?
Kira Barrett.
Yeah. Very talented.
Yes, she is. Yeah. Yeah, that is quite a job, man. It was always interesting chatting with her in her process about where she was at and
how's it coming
what
along?
She was making. Yeah. What does it look like? Send me a pitch. And then, when she brought them to set, I was like, damn, that's looks pretty real to me.
With back to some themes here for a second. Sex and fear can be triggering things for some people, one might say. Characters, actors choose to go as far as they feel they need to with their characters. How do you keep... Maybe this ties back to the intimacy coordination. Maybe this ties back to your communication style. But how do you make sure that's a safe environment so that people feel safe, right? Not the sex aspect, not those scenes, but just these themes and these conversations. What do you feel responsible for something like that as a director?
Yeah, I mean, as soon as we had casted our cast.
Was there a lot? Did you guys... A lot of auditions?
We had a pool, for sure. Yeah, we had some good auditions. And honestly, it was like, it was really about finding the perfect pair. Finding Ben and Jonathan.
Talk about, did you have them in your mind or did you find them? Did they just pop up?
I feel like we found them. I certainly had a version, like the early version, I think, was that they would be a little younger. To be honest.
Okay.
Yeah, a little more like early 20s.
Finding themselves as opposed to have found themselves and now they need to find each other.
Exactly. But then as the people came in for casting, there certainly was a mix of people who looked younger and people who looked older. But the pair that worked the best, I think, was Ben and Jonathan. And so we were like, it has to be them.
They read independently and then you had them.
Then we had them read together, yeah. And
did you have meet beforehand, or was it like an arranged marriage?
Arranged marriage.
Just do it, boys.
Yeah, get to it.
Did they have a lot of what was the collaboration like? Like, what are do you look for a lot? Do you know what you find, and then you just ask for that? Like, how being personal, right? This isn't something that you kind of just it's not someone else's work. It's your feelings. It's your story.
Yeah.
Could you separate yourself from that, or was there?
Yeah, I mean, I think by the time the story is written, I mean, it's personal, but it's not like, it's not my life verbatim.
Yeah,
That would be another thing.
Sure.
But yeah, I think I'm able to like separate it being a story, especially when we're like getting into the thick of bringing it to life and just having conversations, and they had lots of questions. So just, lots of talking, and we did have one night where we all got together and had a drink and chatted and got to know each other a little bit. And, cause we didn't, I knew of all of them, but I had never worked with
any of them yet.
Yeah. At this point. So, but Eric was the one that I thought was when he came into his audition, we asked him to do certain things.
How did you find?
And
what were you asking him to do to get?
Sorry, that sounds a little more ominous than I mean it to.
What part of the movie were you asking him to recreate?
Well, I mean,
sure, yeah,
yeah. Actually, I saw him at a performance at Festival de Voyageur.
Okay,
he was an MC there. for like drag night, I think.
Okay. Okay.
And I had seen him again. I knew who he was, but I'd never seen him perform. And then I just, when I saw him, I was like, oh my God, I need to, like, I think he needs to be in my movie.
There's a lot there. Like, he's, that is a big performance with very little.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then when we had him in the audition, there was just a couple notes that we wanted to give him to see if he could go there. And it was like apparent right away. It was like, oh yeah, you're it. You're exactly it.
Where did he get inspired from? That's my question.
Well, he hasn't revealed that.
No,
me.
He's not showing his hand.
No. Okay.
All right. Like Murderous Cruiser. Where who inspired you?
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, again, another inspiration. I think early inspiration was probably Cruising, by Friedkin.
Okay. William Friedkin.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. Tell me about it.
Oh my gosh, you got to see it.
I will. I will. I
can lend you the Blu-ray if you want.
I am just getting back into a small collection.
Okay.
I am more than happy to take your Blu-ray and watch it. And
yeah.
Does it have all the bells and whistles?
Yeah.
Okay.
Some
definitely.
Really, really fun behind the scenes stuff too. But yeah, basically Al Pacino is an undercover cop in the gay leather bars in the 80s in New York. And it's just an interesting...
Was this pre or post Dog Day?
I think this is post Dog
okay.
Day.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just know how Hollywood's like, hey, Al Pacino can play gay.
Yeah, right? But he's like supposed to not play gay.
Yeah.
But then...
Oh, that's the bit is that
yeah.
he's out looking, but he's... Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
He needs to be like... Because there's... Yeah, there's like a gay killer. There's like a guy going around killing gay people and he has to like solve the crime.
It would be a very heavy influence for you, sir. I like, yeah, like it's great though. Like,
yeah, that was a very early one. I actually saw when I was visiting my brother in New York, I happened to see that for the first time at a small little theater.
Oh, you're jealous.
That was doing a little retrospective.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, this sounds awesome. And then
sure.
I saw it. And
Pacino
was
and Cruising in New York?
Forever changed. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. It's definitely worth checking out.
What do you want the general audience to get out of this?
I think...
Or hope to inspire. Not have.
Yeah.
You don't strike me as controlling, Kobe.
No. No. And I think that's the beauty of art is that it's like in the hands of the audience to
you
decide.
You do hand it over, yeah.
Decide how they feel about it. And obviously that can be a little scary sometimes because they may not like it. But...
Or get it. That's even worse, I think. Like, not liking it, you're ignorant. But not getting it,
yeah.
You're not giving it a chance.
I think the worst is like thinking that it's boring. Like, to not be engaged. Like, if something... That's my worst fear is that people will not... Will lose...
Look me in the eyes right now. Look at me. It's not going to happen.
Okay, good.
You're fine. You are fine. Like that part is done.
Okay, good.
Do you think that it's easier to have this in this style of movie, in a horror, to have the conversation than to where the general public's like, oh, they're shoving it down my throat, right?
Right.
Like
yeah.
The vehicle that you're using is a lot more accessible.
Right.
And then you just jump on for the ride.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, horror is obviously having a huge renaissance right now, and I think maybe that could be really helpful in how and who sees this movie. And then, you know, those are the kinds of movies that I like the most is when it plays on so many different levels. Like, it's not it could just be a fun romp,
yeah,
but it also has all these other layers. I think that's what I want, you know, that's what I want to make, that's what I like watching, is things that, you know, are entertaining at face value, but there are, if you really want to dig into it, you can.
You can find stuff. You're putting Easter eggs in. You're having moments where...
Yeah, like the Cruising, you know, that's such a like important queer history bit.
Sure.
And like the Bible stuff, the like Gomorrah stuff, you know, like if you really know that story, it's kind of an interesting like reclamation of that story in a sense. And
all in 15 minutes.
All in 15 minutes, yeah.
With the reception that it's had, because I know Gimli Film Fest this past summer, what happened there?
Yeah, I mean, that was its first showing. That was sort of like the whole deal with the RBC pitch competition is that the summer before I showed it this summer, I pitched it to an audience, and that's where I won. And then the whole thing is that you have to make the film in a year and then show it at Gimli at the same event. So
what's that feel like?
It's interesting because the next year, a lot of the attention is on the new pitchers. So in some sense, it's like the attention isn't all on you anyways. So it's there's like a little bit of a relief there. But then I guess if you make a good film, it's like, well, that's exciting because then you finally get to show it and see how people reacted. And it was a very, very good reaction. So I was very pleased.
Do you want to make this? You think you could make this into a feature? Would you want to make it into a feature?
Well, yeah, as I said before.
Or are you on to something else now? And
well, I am. But I think maybe I will return to this.
Sure.
I don't feel the urgency right now to make the feature version of this, but I do think that there is a spiritual prequel,
okay,
or sequel to this. I'm not sure. It could be deeper in the past, or maybe it's in our present day. I'm not sure, but I think there's an interesting, bigger sort of like get out us kind of thing that
oh
could.
Please yeah please yeah. Do it, sir. Please do it. That would be if you did like a get out thing. Oh my god, the places you could go.
I know it'd be really fun. It'd be really, really fun.
That's so great.
Yeah. But no, instead of next, I'm gonna do a romance, a straight up romance.
Really?
Yeah.
Another short, or are you gonna?
I'm gonna shoot for the stars and do a feature if I can.
Do you wanna tell us a little bit about it? What's the plot? Are you still working on it?
I won't say much. Okay. I'll just say that it's...
we've been doing good so far with not ruining the shot. So
yeah. you know, it's just a proper romance film a la Past Lives, a la Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Oh, that's so great.
Kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
The loves that really like
break you.
Break you. Yeah. That kind of movie.
I'm so here for it.
So I hope to do that.
Where can people watch this? How do we drive people to see what we've been talking about for the last hour?
I know. I mean, we are showing it at Terror Peg.
It's sold out, dude.
I know. I wish there was a second. There should be a second screening. We'll probably bring it back to Winnipeg. Like, we're kind of in the beginning of our festival circuit.
That's what you were saying. Yeah.
So, you know, I think we'll bring it back because we started here and I think we have to come back here, maybe at the end. But maybe there'll be another, way for people to see it. I don't know.
I would love to park the show outside the theater at the end of the night and do reactions from people.
Oh my god.
As they come out.
Yes.
We can put that together and give that to you and you can do something with it. Yeah. Just be like, tell how do you feel? How do you feel?
How do you feel right now?
Right now. Don't think. Just first word out of your mouth. How do you feel? Like we'll do like how they do it in other horror movies, you know? Mm-hmm. We'll do that for this one. We'll do it at Cinematheque.
Yeah.
We'll hang out outside. It'll be super fun. Thank you for coming on and sharing your story with
me. Yeah, of course.
Listener, thank you again for listening to another episode. October 17th, if you don't already have your tickets, we're at Little Brown Jug for Trivia Night. Tickets are in the show notes. I'm going to let our lovely new guest, Colby, leave without having to put you up with this. So just buy the tickets. Show up. Colby, you should come. Bring some friends.
Yeah.
It's Horror Movie Trivia Night.
Oh, wow. That sounds awesome.
Costume Challenge, Coloring Contest, 5 rounds of trivia. Little Brown Jug, October 17th, $15 a ticket. You can come for free. I'll let you.
Okay. Well, that's tempting.
You can be my guest. If you want to come up and ask some questions.
I love that.
That being said, listener, if this is your first time, go backwards. There's other local Manitobans that have done the show that are so gracious with their time and share their stories with us. Thank you for listening to Colby's. I will let you know. Once he tells me that the movie is out, we will make sure as many people can see this because it's beautiful, it's meaningful, it's a great short.
Oh, well, thank you.
You're welcome. I've been Michael Petro. My guest has been
Colby Friesen.
And we've been your Real Debaters this week. Watch all the movies, kids. Say bye, Colby.
Bye-bye.
If you have any problems, dial information. Thank you for calling.